You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's fair to say new Edmonton Oilers head coach Ken Hitchcock got a very good taste of the challenge that awaits him as he tries to figure out what he can do to set the struggling team on the right track a week after he took the coaching reins from the fired Todd McLellan. And there's a lot for Hitchcock to do, and he's already started, by double shifting Connor McDavid 5-on-5, by establishing an identity line for Milan Lucic, who continues to suffer through a perplexing scoring drought, Kyle Brodziak and Zach Kassian, by summoning Jesse Puljujärvi from the AHL to get a first-hand look at the struggling third-year winger with a high-test set of hockey tools. With other teams who had gone through a rebuild phase at the same time as these Oilers finally realizing success, like the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Buffalo Sabres, is there anything Hitchcock, the third winningest coach in NHL history, can do to jumpstart flailing Edmonton? I'm Craig Ellingson, and this is the Oil Spills Podcast for Tuesday, November 27th, 2018. I ask Oilers beat writer Rob Tichkowski of the Edmonton Journal and the Edmonton Sun about Hitchcock and the work he's done over the past week while on a three-game road trip to California, which started with an overtime win in San Jose, continued with a late-game collapse and loss in Anaheim, followed by a mediocre effort and another loss to the last-place Los Angeles Kings. Are we watching a repeat of the sputtering Oilers show we've been watching now, 2016-17 aside, for more than a decade? Is it too much for even Hitchcock to handle? Ken Hitchcock has had a good glimpse at what ails his new team, what works and what doesn't over his first three games behind the Oilers bench. Let's start by talking about how Hitchcock uses Connor McDavid. What changes are we seeing and what can we expect to see, do you think, in the coming games?
His philosophy is to play him a lot and play him to his strengths. Like to you know, in the past, he's seen some time on the penalty kill and such. Hitchcock's not a big fan of that. Neither am I. I don't think you should ever, you know, risk losing your good players to a broken hand or a foot from blocking a shot. It's kind of grunt work. He wants to play him a whole bunch, you know, as his first line center. And then kind of a unique thing is that he will double shift him if you're not getting a lot of power plays, which your others don't. A couple of games on that trip, they had one power play in one game, two on the other. So if there isn't a lot of 5-on-4 time for the Oilers, he will just double shift him on the fourth line and put him, you know, between two fourth line guys to give him the extra minutes and, you know, maybe catch the other team a little bit flat footed, you know, if it's suddenly fourth line against fourth line, but your fourth line has McDavid as center, that could work a little bit. So, you know, he said that he won't mind seeing him up into the 23, 24, even 25 minutes a night range, as long as there are, you know, minutes that Connor McDavid can kind of flourish in. And in today's NHL with, you know, every 5 minutes, there's a TV timeout. There's long breaks between everything. There's not a lot of hitting in the NHL anymore. It's not very intense or physical. There isn't hooking and holding. Skilled offensive players can play more minutes. It's not like it was 10 years ago where you had to battle for every inch of ice and you were taking hacks and being hooked and held and there were constantly scrums and everything. Now it's, it's not quite shinny, but it's not the way it was when you had to play the really, really hard minutes. So, you know, he wants to use McDavid a lot. He's got the best player in the world who has fantastic cardio. So why not take advantage of it? And that's his philosophy there.
And using McDavid on a fourth line, I mean, those players, can they complement him? They have to keep up somehow. I imagine we're using the likes of, you know, maybe not Cassian and Lucic since they're skating with Brodziak, but, you know, there's a reason why McDavid skates with certain players, or we, you know, try to match him with players who complement him.
Yeah, so on the fourth line, which doesn't play much aside from that, like the Cooper Marody was in the 3 minute range and Ty Ratty was in the 5 minute range. Hitchcock doesn't play his fourth line a whole bunch. You know, he's got Jujar on there, Jujar Kara, you know, who kills some penalties and such, but he will try to put, you know, a semi-skilled guy on that line. Like he had Ratty there last game. So when McDavid drops down to the fourth line, it's suddenly McDavid and Ratty, which, you know, in not long ago was Edmonton's first line. So just shows you the state of the team when the difference between the first and the fourth lines is that slim. But yeah, he'll drop him down there and he'll have a fourth line guy who can put a little, theoretically has a little bit of an offensive bent to his game. So what is it this time? It's, you know, Spooner, you know, so who was just up on the first line last game. So, you know, it's not a fourth line in the sense that, you know, you've got these kind of muckers and checkers. It's a fourth line that doesn't play a whole bunch except when, you know, McDavid is down there double shifting, or one of their guys is on the PK like Jujar Kara, or occasionally literally two shifts a period where the fourth line goes up by itself as a unit.
You know, I could probably just run off a list of every player on the Oilers roster and say, how is Hitchcock going to treat this guy or that guy or whatever, but, you know, we don't have all day. Sure. But yes, Puljujärvi was called up by Ken Hitchcock from Bakersfield. I mean, Puljujärvi went down, what, not even 2 weeks ago, and has played four games with the Condors. And then Ken Hitchcock says, hey, bring him up to play in L.A. And so we got to see him. What's Hitchcock's reasoning to do that? I mean, Puljujärvi was sent down to get time, but, you know, clearly, you know, they hired Ken Hitchcock to change a few things and obviously try to get the best out of players, including this guy.
Yeah, well, it's funny. When he was up here, he was, you know, a lot of times he would skate around, not quite aimlessly, but didn't really seem sure what he was supposed to do. You know, so they sent him down, and you know, you think it's going to be for development purposes to get him to be a more complete, hardworking player. So they call him up four games later, and it's, you know, actually it was, you know, to get his confidence up. You know, they're saying, and they did say it at the time, you know, let's get him down there, get his confidence up, you know, see what he's all about. So he went down there, had four good games. And Hitchcock just said, you know, I want this guy's a big player who can skate. He's still very, very raw, which he shouldn't be, you know, 3 years into his career. But he said, let's get him up here and let's work with him at this level, because going down to the AHL and scoring a bunch of goals doesn't mean anything. That's not what the issue is with this kid. It's that he doesn't play a full game. So, you know, Hitchcock says, let's get him up here, get him in our system and start teaching him again. And one of the big issues that Hitchcock has with him is that, you know, on offense, when he has the puck and, you know, he's cycling or on the rush, he's, you know, he's a decent player. Like all offensive players kind of know what they're doing in that situation. The issue with Puljujärvi is that when he didn't have the puck, he would just sort of float around and casually, you know, wave a stick at people. And he wasn't especially tenacious trying to get the puck back you know, on the forecheck. If he didn't get you on the first attempt, he would give up and then kind of just skate behind the play trying to catch up. Whereas, you know, you remember that Ryan Smith would just never quit. He would always be on you hounding and hounding and hounding, trying to get the puck away from you. And oftentimes he did. So Hitchcock, this is a valuable asset, and Hitchcock wants to see if he can get something out of him, because if Puljujärvi ever becomes the player that they envisioned he would be when they drafted him that high, it's an outstanding player, but he's just not there yet. But to be honest, this isn't anything McClellan hasn't done. Like people are saying, well, you know, this is so great to hear Hitchcock talk about, oh, this is Jesse, we got to really work with him, we got to get him up, he's a really important guy. I was going through my line book from last season, and McClellan played Puljujärvi on the first line 19 games, and he played him on the second line 12 games. That's almost half the season he was in a top six role. So any sort of narrative that he didn't get a chance under McClellan is it's not true. He played a lot of premium minutes under Todd McClellan and just didn't do a whole lot with them. So this is a kind of a defining period for Jesse Puljujärvi, because if he can't get it done with Ken Hitchcock and he couldn't get it done with Todd McClellan, suddenly two of the better coaches in the game today decide that he, you know, doesn't necessarily have it, then it's all about, okay, maybe this kid, that's when you start to worry that he isn't who they thought he is. You know, we're not there yet. We're a long, long way from being there yet. You know, he's just getting his fresh start with the new guy. I would give it a couple of months, but if after a couple of months you don't see marked improvement in this kid, I would start to worry about what his future holds.
You know, and I can't help but think, but and we've talked about this in previous podcasts this season, you know, the Nail Yakupov example, slightly different since Yakupov, you know, he was on the Oilers roster the entire time and played a lot of first line minutes. But then again, you spelled out that Puljujärvi certainly had his shot as well. Mm-hmm. But at what point do you point towards the Oilers retarding his development? You know, they somehow, some way, by keeping him in the wrong place, I guess. I mean, or maybe this team isn't the team for him. Mind you, with the Nail Yakupov example, he goes off to St. Louis and Colorado, and of course, it didn't work for him there either. So, you know, spoiling the apple, I suppose, is what I'm trying to get.
Well, it's Nail Yakupov. Everybody said, you know, the coach doesn't like him, and he went through, I don't know how many coaches at Edmonton. It was,
yeah, it'd be a different time, right? Dallas Eakins is no Ken Hitchcock or Todd McClellan.
No, absolutely not. And there were stretches. I mean, Todd Nelson got a little bit out of him, but you know, he played for three different teams, and all three of those teams came up with the same conclusion that this guy does not think the game well enough. He doesn't play well enough within the team structure, and he's not even in the NHL anymore. First round pick, a classic colossal bust. No, Puljujärvi's not that guy, but you have to. It's on the player. Like he's, you know, he spent a lot of time in the minors. You know, that should have helped him. He spent time up here, and it doesn't matter where you play in the lineup. If you're in the top six, okay, you're expected to do one thing. If you're in the bottom six, the bar is a little lower. You're expected to do another. And they said, we don't need you scoring a whole bunch of goals if you're in that third or fourth line role. We just need you playing a certain way to round out your game. So do it. And you know, we're 3 years into it now. And this is another chance and a fresh start. And I think maybe him being sent down lights a fire under him. We'll see. But at this point, I think it's on Puljujärvi to just be a better, more hardworking, more complete player. He's had a really good coach in McClellan give him every opportunity they could. He's had time in the minors. And now he has another coach in Ken Hitchcock saying that I'm going to take this guy under my wing and do everything I can to make him a player, because again, he's a big guy. He skates well. He's got a tremendous shot. He's strong. If you can get him to be what a player with all those skills should be, you're looking at a guy who can be a game changer and can, you know, help get this franchise headed in the right direction. But I'd say right now it's all up to Puljujärvi, because everybody wants him to succeed. It's not like the organization is trying to hold him back. Like McClellan and the coaches are saying, you know, this guy could help us win, but, you know, I don't like him, so I'm going to keep him on the third and fourth line at the risk of my own job. Everybody in the entire organization wants him to succeed and is doing everything they can. And they see him from the inside. They talk to him in meetings. They watch him in practice. So they're making the decisions based on that information, which is a lot of information that other people never really see, frankly. So, you know, the criticism that somehow the Oilers are holding him back, I don't think holds a lot of water. They're not a great organization when it comes to developing talent, but a lot of that maybe stems from the fact they're not very good at drafting that talent. So, I mean, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, maybe.
You know, and I'm going to talk to you about Milan Lucic. I mean, obviously he was a big high profile signing. Who was supposed to come here and somehow fill the Taylor Hall role and score a few goals. And he's another poster boy, along with Puljujärvi, as, you know, the struggling forward who can't score. And, you know, Hitchcock, he put him on the so-called identity line now. That's what he called it, with Brodziak and Zach Cassian, in an effort to jumpstart his game. And I guess all three of them.
Yeah, it's been a long, like, he had, when they first signed him, he thought, okay, you know, I could, you know, the Oilers were a team that got, you know, pushed around a little bit, and you know, you could see that I could see, you know, why that he, why Chiarelli wanted to bolster the Oilers a little bit. And for 1 year, it was fantastic. You know, the year that they made the playoffs and they had Lucic and Maroon and Cassian and Darnell Nurse, they were a big, heavy team that had control of the puck and cycled it. And, you know, really, you know, pushed teams around, intimidated teams, and had a lot of skill, and they were hard to play against. You know, they would beat you up on the forecheck. And then everything dried up. Maroon, Lucic, Cassian, and, you know, Cassian, or sorry, Lucic, I mean, that's a brutal contract. If you strip away the money and say, you know, this guy's making, you know, 2.5 or whatever to be a third line guy who makes sure that nothing happens to McDavid, and in games like the against the Flames, you know, nobody's going to do anything. He settled them right down, he and Cassian. Games like that, the Oilers never have to worry about. The fact that he's making 6 is kind of tough, and he's got like 4 or 5 years left on that deal is brutal. But because he's not going to be, you know, if he's not scoring now, how good is he going to be in 3 or 4 years? You know, I don't know how it dried up, because he gets his looks, he gets his opportunity, he gets his shots, but they just don't go in. Everything hits the crest or hits a leg. It's crazy, but it's going on, you know, 2 goals in 69 games or something along those lines. That's, you know, that's terrible for a guy, and it weighs on him. And then, you know, his mood gets a little bit sour, and he's trying to stay positive, but you know, he has to know that everybody's saying, you know, what's with Milan Lucic? He's a guy who scored, you know, 25 in the league before, and now he struggles to get one. One thing though, like he should be out there after practice every day with 30 or 40 pucks in and around the slot area, just snapping pucks into corners and sides, and just getting that muscle memory down. I don't see a lot of that from him. I see frustration, and he talks about, you know, changing routine and sticks and everything like that. But if you want to be good at finishing from around the net, where he gets a lot of his opportunities, you have to stay after practice and, you know, 50 pucks after every single practice. And then some of those looks you get, they're going to go in, because you've worked on that skill, and that's where he's going to score from. Like, people say that his, you know, it's because of his speed and everything. He was never a guy who scored off the rush. He was a guy who planted himself around the net, fought for position, and then banged in those rebounds or the, you know, the quick shots from in close. He's still getting those looks, but they're just not going in. So you have to work on your shot from in close. That's plain and simple.
Now, Hitchcock's teams have historically been known to be defensive-minded. You know, obviously, Hitchcock's career spans, you know, more than 20 years. We're talking about a completely different NHL when he started coaching the Dallas Stars in the mid-90s. And, of course, those teams had the likes of Sergei Zubov on the blue line, along with Darian Hatcher, Richard Matvichuk, etc. And, of course, the Oilers don't have that defense. They don't have those players. But Hitchcock did help develop those guys into what they became, eventually winning a Stanley Cup. Now, where does Ken Hitchcock start with this defense? We've got, you know, we don't have a bona fide number one defenseman who can, you know, quarterback's power play. I mean, maybe Oscar Klefbom one day will grow into that, but he's already in his mid-20s. On and on. This is a team that has, you know, as you've written before and many people have said before, we've got Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and a whole lot of guys who are right now second, third-line players. And all of those, you know, the defense doesn't have a stud. What is Hitchcock's, you know, he's got an uphill battle with this defense.
Yeah, you look at this roster, and it's boy oh boy, there isn't a lot to work with. There's some glaring holes in this team. So he wants to, you know, just get everybody playing that really tenacious forecheck and backcheck and hound the puck constantly. And if you have some speed and you have the willingness to do it, you can do it. But we saw just already in the last 2 road games, you know, like, I think the biggest issue on any team is that you have to have the ability to score 3 goals in a game. If you don't do it, then afterwards, you know, you lose, you know, 2-1 in overtime like the Oilers did, or 3-2 before the empty netters did in Los Angeles. And, you know, you're cursing your mistakes. But when you only score 1 goal, yeah, you're going to be at the mercy of your mistakes. And every team makes mistakes, and every team is going to give up a couple of goals. So as much as you want to focus on the defensive side of things, and the Oilers have some problems there. There were some glaring mistakes on all three goals against the Kings, you know, not counting the empty netters, just people left wide open. And you have to absolutely shore that stuff up. And that comes through film work and repetition and the players just wanting to buy in. But at the other end of the spectrum, this team has to score more goals, and they have to come from somebody other than Connor McDavid. You know, there's, you know, Chayson's hot, but everybody else is ice cold on this team. Nobody's getting any offense done. And, you know, if you're looking to win 2-1, you're going to lose way more than you win. Like, they do need to shore up their defense. They're giving away a lot of easy ones and free looks, and just, you know, they work so hard to score their one goal, and then they just give it away just really easily for no reason to tie it up or fall behind. So, like, listen, it's a bad organization that, you know, missed the playoffs forever, and there's a lot of holes on defense. There's a lot of holes on offense. There's a lot to do. You know, and I said this is a defining moment for Puljujarvi. It's also a defining moment for the Oilers. If you've got Todd McClellan in here who can't get this team to go anywhere, and then you bring in Ken Hitchcock and he can't get this team to go anywhere, then, you know, then what? People are going to be looking at this and saying, oh, okay, you know, there's not a lot of hope for this organization. So, yeah, I think the next month, couple of months here, seeing which way the Oilers go under the new regime, whether they kind of pull it together and stay in that playoff hunt, or they fall off and become, you know, the Oilers of the last 11 or 12 years. It's going to be really interesting to see that, because if this thing goes south again, it might stay that way for a long time.
Yeah, we've been talking this way for years.
Yeah, 11 of the last 12 years they missed the playoffs.
Except for 2016.
Yeah, I think they finished 28th or lower, you know, 8 of those years. It's just, you know, you look at Buffalo Sabres, they finished below the Edmonton Oilers heading into that draft lottery that the Oilers won. So the Oilers get Connor McDavid and they get Eichel. And, you know, here they are. They're competing for, you know, fighting for first place in the East, while the Oilers are back in their usual spot. Toronto Maple Leafs were a rebuilding team that was said to be right on par with the Edmonton Oilers at the time. They've left them in the dust. All of these teams have managed to rebuild their organizations very quickly. Well, quickly, 3 or 4 years, and they're legitimate and doing what you should do with draft lotteries and scouting and rebuilding. And the Oilers are stuck in the same spot. You know, if they hadn't won the lottery, it would have been catastrophic. I can't imagine where they would be right now, if they would even still be in Edmonton. I don't know if people would be crossing the street to watch that team, but they have to get something going in the right direction, because they're just getting lapped by all these teams that were, you know, down at their level not that long ago.
That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to our show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.